Talking History with Patrick Gagan on News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back. You're listening to Talking History, and this is Tommy Graham. Now, one of the ongoing problems for the general reader or listener to this show, indeed, is the unavailability of certain, you know, classic texts of Irish history. Now, to fill this gap, University College Dublin Press, over the last number of years, have been publishing a series known as Classics of Irish History. And the series is edited, the general editor is Professor Tom Garvin. Now, the latest in this series is A Chronicle of Jails by Darrell Figgis. And the book is introduced and edited by William Murphy. Now, Darrell Figgis may not be a household name, so I talked with William Murphy earlier in the week, and first of all, I asked him who was Darrell Figgis.
It's quite interesting that most people haven't heard of Figgis. He was quite a prominent figure during the revolutionary period. He was a Rathmines man, but he had moved to London to work in the family tea business. And he returned around 1913. He was a literary figure and a journalist and a propagandist.
Now, a name like Figgis, am I right in assuming he was Protestant?
You're dead right. Absolutely. He was Protestant. And this becomes an interesting issue in his relationship with some of his colleagues in prison later on, who are, about appearing to offend him because of his Protestantism. But he was a very interesting man. He came back in 1913 and became involved in the revolutionary movement. He was involved in the Irish Volunteers. He was involved in the whole gun running incident. But in the split, after the split, he became quite inactive in 1914-15.
Which split are we talking about here? You're talking about the split between the National and the Irish Volunteers. Those who fought with Redmond, those who stayed at home.
Exactly. So the split which occurred over the outbreak of the First World War. He became quite inactive for a while, but nonetheless he was arrested after the 1916 Rising, as was pretty typical really. There were widespread arrests after the 1916 Rising when there was a sweep of maybe over 3,000 people, many of whom obviously had nothing at all to do with the Rising. And he was taken to Castlebar Jail, first of all. Then he was taken to a Richmond Barracks in Dublin. And from there he was taken to Stafford Jail in England, where he was held for about a month. And finally he was taken to Reading Jail. And he stayed there until December 1916.
Now, why was he taken to Reading? Because most internees ended up in Frongoc in Wales, but he ended up in Reading. Why?
He did.
Why?
Probably because he was believed to be a significant figure, despite the fact he hadn't been involved in the Rising at all.
Was that faulty intelligence then?
Yeah, I mean, the logic behind a lot of the decisions made by the British authorities at this point was quite faulty. One of the things which may have drawn them to Figgis is because he had been a propagandist. He was very well educated, literary, he had a posh accent, and quite a number of figures were picked out like that and sent to Reading, even though they really weren't significant figures at all. And other people who were, you know, drivers of the revolution were sent off to Frongoc because they were, you know, not noticed by the British. They were commoner gardener, racy of the soil men as far as they were concerned.
Like Michael Collins.
Exactly.
Now, this guy, Figgis, I mean, he had a fairly high regard for himself. I love the quote you have here from Patrick Collum, who said that Figgis, quote, could be counted on to do a dangerous thing, and he was a man who, having done that thing, would be endlessly loquacious about it.
Yeah, I mean, Figgis was... had a very, very high opinion of himself. It's one of the things that's noticeable about his autobiographical writings, like A Chronicle of Jails, and he also published a second Chronicle of Jails describing his experience in prison in 1918-1919. And one of the things that's interesting about them is that, you know, most autobiographical writings emphasise the person themselves, but Darrell certainly puts himself front and foremost.
So he puts himself at the centre of the narrative.
Absolutely, and he was noted for being vain at the time. Those prisoners who had to share prison with him were very irritated by his vanity. Some of them refer to him as the sacred egoist and things like that, and they don't want to be associated with him.
Why then, what's special about his memoir then, William? I mean, what does it tell us that's new? I mean, obviously it was published in 1917, but this, I doubt if there'd be many editions of it published since. So in the present time, what does it tell us that we don't know?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting for a number of reasons. First of all, as you already pointed out, most internees were sent to Frongoc. And there are some memoirs of internees who were sent to Frongoc that are available, but there aren't any memoirs available of people who were sent to Reading. So we get a picture of what life was like in Reading among that elite leadership group. The other thing that's very interesting about it is he's quite interesting on the reaction on Achill Island, where he was living at the time, to the Rising. The sort of confusion of rumours and counter-rumour that precede the Rising and arrive during the week of the Rising. So it's very interesting in in that portrait of provincial Ireland as the rising is ongoing. The other thing that's very interesting about him is compared to most other memoirs, it's very well written. I mean, he did have a very good literary style. He was proud of himself as a professional writer. And most memoirists of that period weren't professional writers at all. Whereas this is a very, very well written and constructed memoir.
Now, of course, Reading had another famous guest of the nation, Oscar Wilde. And one gets the impression that Figgis sort of fancied himself as a latter-day Wilde.
Absolutely. And there are lots of allusions to Wilde within the memoir, to the Ballad of Reading Jail, obviously. And he clearly wants himself to be associated with Wilde because of Wilde's literary achievements. But also, he's writing into a tradition of nationalist prison memoir. So he's also very conscious of the O'Donovan Rosses and the Davits who have gone before him. And he wants to write a memoir which, you know, will achieve fame alongside the Davits and the O'Donovan Rosses.
Now, when was A Chronicle of Jails first published?
It was published quite soon after his release. It was published in June 1917. And it coincided with the release of the 1916 Convicts, who were released in the same month. It sold quite well at the time. It went into a second edition pretty rapidly, within a month. And also, it was very well reviewed at the time in the Irish Independent and the Irish Book Lover. And right through to 1918, nationalist bookshops continued to promote Figgis's A Chronicle of Jails. So obviously it sold quite well for a number of years.
And have you any idea to what extent it was referenced by other secondary works?
It has been used. It quite regularly appears in articles or books which deal with political imprisonment during this period. The most recent excellent study of political imprisonment during this period is Sean McConville's study of Irish political imprisonment, which came out a couple of years ago. And McConville references Figgis. So he's quite regularly used by scholars, but he's not been available to the wider public because the book is, you know, so scarce. It hasn't been republished since 1917.
Now, what happened to him later? What did he do during the War of Independence, for example?
Well, during the War of Independence, he was the secretary for the commission which investigated into Irish resources and industries, set up by Dáil Éireann. But he wasn't elected to the Dáil, and he was very upset by that. He wasn't selected. And then in 1922, he was pro-treaty. Late 21, 22, he was pro-treaty. But he stood for election as a pro-treaty independent candidate, and that annoyed both the pro-treaty and anti-treaty sides. And in actual fact, a group of Republicans broke into his apartment, held him down, and shaved off half of his beard. He had a large red beard, which he was very proud of. He thought it made him look like Parnell.
Not a good experience for a vain man, obviously.
No.
Now, I get the impression then he was close to Arthur Griffith.
He was very close to Griffith, and the connection with Griffith was largely responsible for what promotion he achieved. But when Griffith died, his political career tended to, you know, go downhill, and it also went downhill because of a couple of scandals. He was involved with probably the first corruption scandal, the New State.
This is an interesting story, listeners, because there's a businessman called Andrew Belton who wanted to get the license for a radio station, interestingly.
Yes.
This is very contemporary, sort of an air about it.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, Belton was a businessman who spotted the chance that this new state is being established and there are a lot of licenses and, you know, opportunities for business to come up. So he decided that one way, maybe, to get those licenses would be to have a man on the inside. And he picked Figgis as his man on the inside. He paid him for a number of months, thinking the Figgis would provide him with contacts. Figgis pretty much failed. But
this was his Duchess of York moment.
Exactly.
Right.
But when the state decided to set up a radio station in 1924, or at least talk about setting up a radio station, this relationship between Figgis and Belton was exposed. And Figgis, Figgis had to resign from the commission which was set up to investigate into setting up the radio station. So that was a scandal. And then there were a series of personal scandals.
It was all downhill from here on in, really, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. His wife committed suicide in 1924, late 24. She shot herself in Rathfarnham. And it's unclear the circumstances, but she may have committed suicide because Figgis had started a relationship with another woman. Although at the inquest, Figgis said it was because she had been upset since that night when the apartment was invaded by Republicans.
Right. Now, he then had an affair with a woman who's very elegantly described her as a dancing mistress from Thomas Street, a 21-year-old dancing mistress. Now, she died of septicemia, of infection or whatever.
That's right.
That sounds to me like possible abortion. Is there any evidence on that score?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite evident it was after abortion. And now, the circumstances of the abortion are unclear. Fergus was in London when Rita North arrived to visit him. She arrived on his door, essentially, in late 1925 and said, I'm ill. And she subsequently died at Hendon Hospital in North London from septicemia, as you say. And there was an inquiry into it. And it's quite clear that she had an abortion, but it's not clear whether she had the abortion in Dublin and then travelled to London, or whether she actually went to London and acquired the abortion with Fergus.
Now, Fergus took this badly, obviously.
Fergus took this very badly. And in the middle of the inquest, there was a first hearing where he gave evidence. But before the second hearing could be held, he committed suicide himself. He gassed himself in a room in Bloomsbury in London.
Well, it's all in this story, I have to say. That's A Chronicle of Jails by Daryl Fergus, introduced by William Murphy, one of the classics of Irish history series published by University College Dublin Press. Don't go away, plenty more after the break.